Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Sarah Gutman from Legacy Tree. So welcome, Sarah. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Bob. Very excited to be able to talk about Italian families with you today.
Yes, it's my passion. My wife thinks I'm crazy. So,
my husband.
So, my first question, I want to talk about Legacy Tree and what you could do to help people. But before we go there, you know, what got you started in researching your roots?
Sure. I started about when I was somewhere between 9 and 13 years old, and I'm going to be 40 in April. So I've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this before the internet. And it was one of those things, especially with my Italian family, though my married name is Gutman, but my maiden name is Gadotti. And I think the fact that my family was always kind of like, you know, we don't talk about them, you know, the dead are dead. It kind of, I think, fueled that, you know, let me find, try to figure out what my past was like because nobody else is talking about it. And it's really been a great experience. I've met so many wonderful people. Just so many stories have come out of this and just knowing about myself and knowing about my family and being able to share that to others. And now, you know, I couldn't think of anything else better to do than to help other people discover their family, which is why I became a professional genealogist.
Yeah, you know, and that's what I find the most interesting about it is you kind of get a sense for who you are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that must have been hard at, you know, 13 years old to start doing this.
Yeah, it's, you know, I would call it my maternal grandparents had passed away from that, that point. And my, my grandparents, actually my grandmother, my paternal grandma just passed away last month at 92, but my grandfather's still alive. So I would call them up all the time and I would ask them questions and can you send me pictures? And, you know, begrudgingly they did, but I think after a while they had some fun with it. And one of the things that came out was my grandfather, he always was told that his father was born in Yonkers, New York. And his father passed away at the age of 70, and there was really no other reason for him to doubt that. And one day, I guess it was probably about maybe 10 years ago, I was looking through a record collection, some passenger records. I was trying to find my great-grandfather. His name was Charles Gadotti, same as my grandpa. And I was trying to find the his parents on a passenger list. And I came across this one family who came in 1912, and it was the exact names of my grandfather's father and his siblings and the parents. And it was way too coincidental because Gadotti is not a common name and the ages all lined up. So I was super excited about this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just, you know, uncovered this great mystery. And I saw my grandpa and I showed him this record and he just started to cry. And I felt so bad about that because, you know, I didn't want to do anything to upset my grandpa. And he had said he felt as though his father had lied to him his whole life. He didn't know why his dad would not acknowledge his Italian heritage. And it was really hard for him to get over that. You know, the dead kind of die with their secrets. But he's come around. He's helped me get my dual Italian citizenship. He's done everything he could to get me the paperwork that he needed on his end because he's my living ascendant. And just had a lot of fun with it. So, yeah.
So did you figure out why? Or, you know,
we don't really
I know a lot of people, you know, when they came, they just, you know, they forgot about it. They wanted to be American and just.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's interesting because looking back in his documentation on his marriage record, he said he was born in Italy. On my, I'm not really quite sure why, because his older siblings, they always said that they were born in Italy. But after it was my great grandfather, they had said he was born in America and his younger brother was born in America. Now, my great grandfather's name originally was Carlo. And then he changed it to Charles. So that also kind of, I think, upset my grandfather because that was his name. He always thought he was named after his dad, and in a sense he was. But the fact that his father came from a different country, had a whole different name, I think that really kind of just stung with him. But the only thing we can think about is just the fact that, you know, he might have tried to assimilate more into the American culture, and it would be better if he presented himself as an American. And the other, I guess, big factor was he married a woman who was of Hungarian descent, my great grandmother. So there's that question, is maybe the family was not accepting of an Italian immigrant, but if he presented himself as an American, that he might have been more accepted into the family he was marrying into. So I guess we'll never actually know, but it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, it is. It is. My father's father was Ubaldo. There was no change in that. And my brother, my grandfather wanted my brother to be named Ubaldo because he was the oldest son. My mother said, you know, I love you very much, but you know, I can't.
we're not doing that. My cousin's name is Berta Bumbalo, and that's kind of an awful name. She's named after my grandmother, whose name was Berta Paul, but Berta Bumbalo just does not go together.
So what does she call herself?
Berta Bumbalo.
Don't you? Yeah, really.
Oh yeah, she totally embraces it. She's gorgeous. She's 32 years old and everything, and like she just owns the name.
So. Oh, that's great. That's super.
Interesting thing with my family. So in doing the dual Italian citizenship, I found out the family was from Pontegano Faiana. And it's a very small village, and they don't have their own record collection. So they outsourced that to Montecorvo Pugliano. So I had to kind of figure out how that was connected. And it was actually through the magic of Facebook and befriending the different communes and just talking to people on there and family groups to find out who was keeping this record collection for the family. And so my great grandfather, his father, Raphael, there was a 30-year age difference between Raphael and his wife, Anna. And I had talked to my grandfather's cousin, who had since passed away, and she was one of the siblings of the older parents who they, you know, said were from Italy. And she said the story was that Raphael had come from the north, and you know, he was a widow who's, you know, 30 years older, and the family had, it was kind of one of those taming of the shrew stories. So Anna, my great grandmother, she was the younger of the sisters, and her older sister was supposedly just a hideous troll and had like really big prominent features, like a big nose and everything. And nobody wanted to marry her. So they finally got her married off. So now here's Anna, and she's 25 years old, which is considered a spinster back then. And the family had just thought, okay, you know, we'll just give her to this guy. You know, he wants her, it's fine. And supposedly they said that they didn't think that she was too old to have children. So kind of as a joke, the family had said that they were going to leave all their orange groves, this field of orange groves, to their descendants, all this land in Italy, which should be me. But I don't know where that record loss got into there, if anything was ever written down, but you know, thanks to this ugly sister, I should own property in Italy. So I don't know.
I know. You know, we, you know, from the Pio Malafa, well, Crostriolo too, I'm sure there's stuff all over that. I mean, there's castles all over the place, but there's still, you know, a few palazzos left. And I keep saying to my cousin, can't we buy one of these things back? Ooh, you know, they were all sold off, you know, but you know, that would just be fabulous to have something like that. And on my mom's side, the house where my great grandparents lived and my grandmother, you know, I guess she must have been born there. It's still there. It's still there in Torito.
Really?
You know, yeah. And in fact, my oldest uncle didn't come over until the 50s. So all my cousins were born in Italy and, you know, from there and everything. So,
that's,
you know,
tremendous.
A couple have gone back, you know, and my one cousin, you know, he went back and filmed it and, you know, went to the house and everything. But I would have knocked on the door. He didn't.
Oh, I absolutely would have. I would have gone in and been like, hey, have it, Scotty.
But, you know, my cousin described it, my oldest cousin described it, and it was two rooms, you know. But she said, you know, we were better off than most because we had the house. And there was a bedroom and, you know, the every other thing, room, kitchen, family room, kids' bedroom, fireplace, you know, the whole, you know, the whole 9 yards as far as that goes. So have you been back to these towns?
So I haven't. That would be like a dream of mine. I've been to Italy. I went there in 2007 and to Florence and Rome when my brother was studying abroad. And I've been trying to convince my parents to pay for a family trip. Because what makes a trip better is when you don't have to pay for it, to go back to Italy. And, you know, I said I would be their tour guide and go to all the churches and everything. But I'm kind of still the only one that's really interested in all of this. I finally did convince my brother and one of my cousins to go for dual citizenship. So they've gone through that process, too. So I'm hoping that that'll kind of motivate people to come and go through all these. But I know what's going to happen is I'm going to end up going there and I'm just going to want to sit and look at all the record collections in the church and everybody's just, you know, not going to have any interest in that. So I think I have to just do that by myself at some point. But I have made connections with family, distant family members over there. One on my dad's mother's side and one on my grandfather's side. So I have both of them kind of, you know, and I would email them during the pandemic and see how they were doing and everything. So it's nice just to have that connection over there.
Well, you could tell your parents that we're going in April. I mean, we postponed it twice, but I'm paying for the kids. My kids are young.
Okay.
Because they're adopted, so they're 26 and 25, much too young for an old guy like me. But I'm paying for everybody to go, and we're going to do this grand rooting tour. We're going to go to the old houses, and we had a dinner planned with all these cousins that I never met. You know, second, third, fourth cousins. So, you know, we're definitely going to do that. And I'm dying. We went once 25 years ago. We lived in England, and I didn't know at the time. We went to Rome, of course, right? But I didn't know at the time when we passed through Naples to pick up the car to drive to Sorrento that both my father's parents lived a half a block from the train station.
I mean, really? Wow.
Yeah. I could have walked there, but I had no idea.
I think sometimes, like, I don't know about other people, but so one of my jobs is Legacy Tree is I find these records for people and look at them. And if you look at the birth records, a lot of times they'll tell you the house that the person was born in. And you can go and Google Earth it and see, you know, like, wow, how could you possibly have this family of 10 living in this tiny little, almost like a hut? But it's so cool, some of the information that you can get on the records, like the occupations, name of the parents, street address and everything, just piece things together about what you think that their life was like in Italy.
Well, yeah. And, you know, again, on my paternal grandmother's side, they lived on Via Carbonara in Naples. And the records are, this one lived at 23, this one lived at 25, this one lived at 30. They basically own the street.
Wow, yeah.
And there's a hotel in Naples, Hotel Cracciolo, that was their palace.
Really?
So, yeah, it's this, look it up. You'll be
wow.
Amazed. My great grandmother's birth record, she was born at one house on Via Carbonara. Mm-hmm. And then she passed away in 1902. She was only 40 when she passed away. Mm-hmm. At another house on the same street. And their occupations are, then this is so funny, some say property owner.
Okay.
Some just say rich person.
Yeah. I wish mine said that.
Yeah, well,
unfortunately,
it's all gone. My wife keeps saying, so where's the jewelry? Where's the house? Where's the stuff? You know,
it's interesting when you find things on like the records. And it makes it easier too when you're looking, when you're crossing the pond for the occupations. A lot of times I'm always happy if I can find somebody who's like a shoemaker or a barber, because that profession seems to stay in the family. to make it easier for people to trace their family that way.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. And I've talked to so many people like that. You know, when my grandfather came, I don't know why my grandmother came. The only thing I know is that her aunt had come in 1905, and my grandparents came in 1915. They are the only two from the family that came to America, and for obvious reasons, they didn't need to come. And the only thing we could piece together, that talking to one of my cousins from my grandmother's aunt, was that her great-grandfather was an entrepreneur of sorts.
Okay.
And when he came, she said, they think he either opened up a leather factory or a wallet factory or shoe factory, something to do with leather. And the only thing I could think of is my grandmother's aunt said, come to America and my husband will help you set up a business, because my grandfather did. He owned a bridal veil and crown business in New York City. So that's the only thing I could think is that he must have said, I'll help him set up a business and we'll do that. But just one more question before we, because I want to get to legacy tree. You said your family came from Little Italy in New York, and my wife's family came from there. My wife's mother grew up on Spring Street.
Okay, yeah, they actually were from Mulberry Street. So
around the corner, practically.
I've never been there, but have you been to the Tenement Museum?
No, I haven't. I'm dying to go.
You have to go. It's really interesting. And when I had gone there, so my family, and there's a little bit about, so this is my grandmother's side, the Fergettis, were very good friends with Joseph Morrow, he was one of those people, like Jacob Riis said, we're doing the pictures of the slums in Italy. So he was actually using my grandmother's family as photo subjects. And when we went to the Tenement Museum, which is right by where they lived, there was a picture of my great grandmother's aunts and cousins around making piecemeal work dress cloths, which is so cool to see.
He
had documented this. But also in Little Italy, so what I was talking about with you earlier, so with the Fergetti family, Vincenzo Fergetti, he came over to Italy and he was in Mulberry Street, and he went back to Italy about, I think, two times that I have it documented. And he had children with his wife during that time period. And then his wife travels to America with her brother and all the kids. And then I guess what happened, based on census records and other records that we found, is when she got here, she found out that her husband was married to somebody over in America. And he had said that she was dead on all these papers. And one of the sons was extremely upset by that. He changed his last name and he moved to Iowa. Probably just, you know, he just felt like his father had just completely disowned the family and he disowned him. But you look at these record collections and different census records and different things. The wife is declaring the husband's dead. She's declaring he's dead. There's a whole big fight. I guess at one point, his American wife here, they got divorced or she died. She disappears from the records. And supposedly they had a very tumultuous relationship, but oddly enough, the family didn't have enough money to get them separate burial plots. So when they died, they both ended up sharing a gravesite together. And I can't imagine, like, they had to have just been so furious at it.
That's some kind of poetic justice, I guess. Yeah.
United together forever.
Oh, that's funny. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because in New York, in Queens, my parents are all buried in the same plot with my grandparents, and there they stack you three on top of each other.
Yeah,
in St. Mary's, because there's no room, you know. So what happened there was, I guess my aunt and uncle had the plot and they decided to be buried someplace else, so my mom and dad are there. But the St. Mary's, if you walk through St. Mary's in Queens, you walk through it and you just I know that family. I know that family.
All these names.
All these Italian names pop up, you know, and you know them from either Corona or Flushing or College Point or all of those places. So let's talk about Legacy Tree. What services do you offer, and how do you help people?
I am on the Italian team, and I help people who have Italian American ancestry, and I also help people who are either DIYers or also a lot of legal services like ICA will send clients over who are trying to get dual Italian citizenship, and I do the research and help get the documents for them. And when they're looking for Italian documents, we have people on site who are able to get the information for us. And I love, and I'm actually, right before I was on the call with you, working on a client who didn't realize that her ancestors were, that she would be able to go for dual Italian citizenship. So I just emailed her the other day and I said, I have some great news for her. If you want to go for it, you know, I think we can order these documents. So she was really excited. So I'm just filling out some forms for her right now, trying to get everything together so that she can use that to apply for dual citizenship. So it's really exciting. It's really fun. I went through the process myself, and I've helped my cousin and my brother go through the process. So that has definitely helped me know what to kind of expect and see maybe a potential, you know, red flag or a loophole or something to help clients with. And it's just a lot of fun. And, you know, honestly, I did not speak Italian or read Italian before I started this. I was on the American team, and the fact that I have the dual citizenship and they kind of transferred me over. So the past few months I've been learning Italian and reading it on the program Duolingo. And that's a fun thing to occupy you. And it's just so great. And it's like a brain exercise for just reading these Italian records and seeing that old handwriting. It's a lot of fun.
I tell people, you know, they said, well, I don't read Italian, you know, looking on the Antonati and all of that stuff. I said, you catch on. I said, everything's pretty much in the same place. The, you know, the tough ones are the, you know, the 18, 20, 18, 30 ones where it's all handwritten. And, you know, it's amazing because you get this, some of them are this beautiful penmanship. Mm-hmm. And all of my records are the guy that writes like me. I don't.
Yeah.
I can't make out anything.
Well, I will say I did have good training because my grandmother, the one who just passed away, would always write me these cards. And she had the records, you know, the handwriting from the old records. And so I can, you know, I can look at these things and I think other people are like, oh my gosh, what does this say? And I was like, oh, this looks like grandma's Christmas card. Like, I got this. So, I was on Google Chrome one day, and sometimes they automatically switch the language, you know, the website to English. And I didn't realize I had it on that because I thought I was reading it in Italian. I'm like, my English, my Italian has gotten phenomenal. Like, I can read all these words. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh, you idiot. Like, it's been on English this whole time.
I think one of the greatest things when you find some of those old records is when you find a signature of,
yes,
of a great grandparent, a great great grandparent. You know, even in my case, I have some with my great great my third great grandfather on it. You know, and it's just amazing to find that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I wish I did it a long time ago, but I just started the process. If I do go through with the Italian citizenship, I'm going to have to go there for 45 days. I can't wait 8 years.
Yeah, I was listening to your podcast, and you had the guy from the ICA on there. It's very interesting. There are cancellations. Like, I had picked up one, and I got mine in 3 weeks.
That's great.
And it was almost like a genealogy, you know, great race, like to try to get all the last things that I needed, because I had been doing this for people. And it was one of those things where you just kind of want to pull the trigger for yourself. And I had just kept looking at the website and I saw there was a cancellation. It was 3 weeks. And I was like, I could do this. So I'm lucky enough that my family, you know, where they lived in New York is close enough to where I am now on Long Island that I can go, you know, to the record places and I can request these things and get the apostilles. So I was able to bypass that 2-year wait period in New York and just go. Now, I did have some documents that I you know, didn't come in time. And the guy who worked with me at the New York consulate was super sweet. And he said, you know, just come back in 2 months and, you know, we'll fix everything. So I was able to do that. So, you know, don't give up, you know, so I would say for yourself, just have everything ready to go and keep looking at the website once it reopens and, you know, see if you can snag a cancellation.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. But I wouldn't mind spending 45 days in Italy. So
yeah, go for it. Me neither, but my husband and my kids might.
Yeah, well, that's why I said it's up to my wife. But, you know, I a couple interesting things, because I know it's an issue. My friend Antonia, she moved to Salerno. It's 2 years ago now. But she got her citizenship, and she actually moved there. You know, she just went. She had an issue. She was in LA and she had an issue with her, I think it was her grandfather's name or something. There was a misspelling and, you know, they wouldn't accept it. And she said, I started to cry. And the guy told me, okay, come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So she got lucky. But I just got my, and I've been searching for his record for a long time, my grandfather. And I noticed that They have his mother's name spelled wrong.
Okay.
On it. They have her name was Julia Princey with an I at the end, and they had her American spelling Julia with a J.
Okay.
And the last name is Prince. And on my grandmother's name they left out an L in Piermalo. So, you know, those are things that everybody needs to be aware of, that that has to be exact. You know.
Right.
So I'm sure they'll sort that out for me once it comes there. So besides that, so what other services does Legacy Tree do? Do you do like genealogy searches and all of that?
Oh yes, we do it for all over the world. You know, it's not just Italy. They have phenomenal researchers, ones that work for the company. I think there's about 68 of us that work just directly for Legacy Tree, and then we have researchers in, you know, countries I've never even heard the names of before, who will be able to go onto on-site and look for records. And it is, you know, I'm kind of a niche spot where I get to do the Italian citizenship, but all these other researchers out there are doing different areas, different time periods. So we're all have our own specialties. So, you know, you're not going to, you know, have, if you were to request, you know, your Italian research, they're not going to pair you up with somebody who just does, you know, records in France. They're not, you know, they pinpoint who the best fit would be for your researcher. It's just not just, you know, who's up next in the queue. But yeah, we help people with that. We help people get documents. We put together stories. We also create narratives, which are really great. I like writing those. Some of them are really fun to kind of get something, because I think that's also more palpable for people who are non-genealogists to read. I know my family is sick and tired of hearing me talk about my family.
So tell me about it.
Yeah, present it in like a new way.
So that's interesting. So what's the process to do that? I mean, do you take a record and then build upon those records?
I mean, you try. So we'll say like, okay, research my great-grandfather, you know, who's from this area. And we just start looking at records. We're, you know, focusing on occupations. We're looking at newspaper records, obituaries. We also do research about what's going on in the area. You know, I learned a lot about why people were immigrating from certain time periods in Italy. One was about the big tsunami that hit Messina in Sicily. If you look at the water, I think it was in 1919, like the different the water damage that was done to the records. And just looking at the local history, because we are so much made up of, you know, what's going on at our place and time, and try to figure out how that's affecting the family's life around there. You know, for example, I had one I was recently doing for an Italian family that came to America, and he was an organ player at a church in Chicago. And I called up the church and I, you know, wanted to know about the history of the church. And this guy was the organ player for 50 years. And I asked, you know, do you have any pictures of him and any, you know, church records and stuff like that? And it was just really great, like some of the stuff that you get out of it. And I think we get connected to the families, you know, we get invested in them, and we want to find out more about these people and provide that opportunity, that information to the families, you know, so that they can appreciate where they've come from and how that story has made up who they are today. So I think also too, like, we really just care about not only our clients, but their ancestors too. Cause we also think that it's interesting work.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a cool way of doing it too. I mean, I found through Family Search, I did one of their consultations, and they came up with a will from I guess it was my fifth or sixth great granduncle, where he left everything to my great 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 grandmother. But this document was like 40 something pages.
Yeah.
And you got a real sense of who the person was. It wasn't just a date, you know, where he said, you know, he wanted money to be left in perpetuity for the church, you know, to, you know, so much a month and all of that. And, found out, you know, what town they were from, and things like that. But I love that way of doing things. That's something I need to think about with some of my interesting family, because I'm working on, you know, a book about some of these crazy people. I'll tell you one interesting occupation that I found in my research going back 500 years or something like that. There was one family that for like five generations, they were the chief executioner for the town.
Really?
So as I'm going through this thing, I'm seeing they the way they write it, it's they call them the chief justice. But then when I researched it more, I found that the chief justice was really the guy who was signing the death warrants on people.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, the father. And I said, well, that's an interesting piece of information. Then it was the son. I said, oh, gee, that's interesting. Then it was the grandson. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Was this like, you know, you mentioned the family occupations. It seems like that's what they were. They were the executioners. And I don't think they were the guy pulling the switch. I think they were the person that was signing off on this stuff. So crazy things like that. But what's the most interesting thing, whether it's your family or, you know, research you did that you found? I mean, I've heard so many great stories and things that they sound like a coincidence, but you know, they're not, you know?
Right, right. Well, even just something that I was just I know there's so many great ones. I guess I'll just mention one that I was just doing right now. Italian family, and the client thought that that the great-grandfather had, she said that he went to jail helping a woman. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. You know, like, I don't think you go to jail for that. But I looked into some records, and there was all these newspaper records about how this guy had been selling fake gold stocks. And one of the people who he got caught for selling it to was Carnegie's sister. And she was not having it. So he got arrested, and I was able to get all of his prison records. He was in Sing Sing prison. He got sent to another federal prison. They had all the records with that. And the record collection, you almost kind of want to hope that your family gets arrested in a federal prison. But they did great records. So they gave the information about his parents, when his father passed away, where his mother was living, where his mother was from, his mother's birthday, the names of his siblings and everything. And it was like, wow, like this is a treasure trove of records that I, you know, I don't think I would be able to find otherwise for this time period. But just seeing all those, just following him, the case that he was, had made for himself. And then he, of course, had to change his name after he got out of prison, because that's what you do. You know, and just tracing those documents that way. So there's just stuff like that, like finding something for a client where you're just really surprising them with the story that you've always been heard.
Right. Yeah.
You know, isn't necessarily the truth. Even in my own family, you know, my dad always jokes about this. He had a great uncle that he was told the piano just dropped on his head. You know, and unless you're Wile E. Coyote, and like, that doesn't happen. Well, the story was that this guy, his uncle, was having an affair with his boss's wife. And the boss walked into the room and he jumped out the window, not realizing, I guess, how many stories up this window was, and he died. So, you know, my father always said he was always worried about these pianos falling on his head as he was like, walking around.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it happens every day, right?
Yeah. And it's like, who thought to, you know, just who thought of that lie? But even too, just finding things that even are parallel with what's going on in this time period. You know, I was doing some research. When the pandemic happened, I was interested by people who in my family who had passed away between, you know, the Spanish flu period. And I found that three of my my grandma's on my grandma's side of the Italian ancestors, they had all passed away from, you know, the Spanish flu. And just drawing that parallel about what's going on in our current time versus 100 years ago. I just think it's so interesting.
That is interesting. And it's like so weird. It's like almost, you know, almost exactly 100 years. You know, one of the things that I found things about Italy from a small New Jersey newspaper from the 1920s.
Wow.
I found obituaries from my grandmother's family that they published in this paper in, you know, 1926, 1927. So, you know, I always tell people, don't think you're not going to find something.
Right.
You know, when you least expect it, you're going to type in something. And it was one of those, I guess, newspapers.org or something was doing a special at the time, you know, free 30 days or whatever it was. And so I just went in there and it's... My father was born in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, which I'm sure in 1923 was the middle of nowhere. It's the middle of nowhere now, so I can imagine what it was like back then. But, you know, they had like, I guess what would you call it? Like the classified section or something like that. And there were the wildest things in there besides finding out, you know, confirming that my great grandfather's name was Achille, which I kind of suspected. But it also had things about my grandmother's thing. But the funniest things were, it had things in there like my aunt, when she was, I don't know, 10 years old or something like that, motored to Brooklyn for vacation.
Yeah.
And that's just the way they said it, motored. She motored.
Yeah. That's cute.
And there was an article, I guess my uncle was much older than my father, probably at least 15 years. And so maybe probably even more than that. So when he got engaged on New Year's Eve, it had a whole thing. And it's, you know, my father was like five and they dressed him as the New Year's baby.
Okay.
So, you know, so and that's what I tell people. I say, you know, sometimes you need to walk away.
Yep.
But when you need to find something,
yep,
it'll be there.
Just having this conversation with somebody last night. I do some talks at like the local library, and I have kind of like the repeat customers, you know, the people who come up. And she was like, I just feel like I'm spinning my wheels and I'm not getting anywhere. And I was like, I know. I was like, sometimes it reminds me when I used to do online dating and you just kind of have to, you know, get off all the sites for a little bit and just walk away. And then, you know, maybe in a few months come back. And you also never know what new information is currently being put online.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's always a big thing, especially with what's happened with Family Search, which is phenomenal, how all their microfilm is now online and they're just digitizing it, you know, indexing, I should say. So we're going to be seeing so many great, great records, you know, hitting the newsstands, if you will, pretty soon to play around with. And I was just thinking about, so newspapers are my favorite, you know, record type. I had one of my, it was my mom's great aunt and Aunt Honey. She was one of those like legendary figures that, you know, she just was, all the stories about her, but I found a great newspaper article with her that her husband had published because she had an affair with the guy who created Lowe's movie theaters. And you know, there's this whole article about her and the picture they use. She's sitting like so prim and proper, But this article just slammed her about how she left this guy's bed and she went, you know, off with this, the Lowe's movie theater guy. And, you know, this crazy stuff that you would never, they just had a way of writing back then. I don't see anymore. And I think if you're not used to looking at the old newspapers, you'd almost take that for granted, like all the great stuff that you can find in there.
Yeah, it wasn't just reporting news. It was almost like a prosy kind of thing, to give you that flavor. I'll tell you one other interesting thing that I found. I just was bouncing around the internet one day and I came across my second great grandmother was Swiss.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm never going to find this, never in a million years am I going to find her. But I was bouncing around and I found a book that had the listing of the officers in the Neapolitan army in the 1860s. And her last name is Moore, M-O-H-R. And I see this Bernardo Moore listed. Hmm. And it says he was a captain in the Swiss Guard in Naples.
Oh, okay.
And now, so I'm thinking Swiss Guard. I thought they guarded the post. What I found out was, as I did some more research, that especially the Catholic cantons in Switzerland would hire out mercenaries. And Lucerne was the prominent one, and they would hire them to the Naples and, you know, Florence and, you know, places in Germany, and they would be in the military in these places. So then I go down a little further, and I see that Filippo Carciolo. Now, that's my second great-grandfather, Amelia's mother, Amelia's father. So now I'm thinking, okay, well, this Bernardo Moore is assigned to the Neapolitan army. He was Filippo's in the cavalry of the Neapolitan army. They must have met. Maybe they had a party. He meets this woman, right?
Yeah.
And they get married. And so now I'm like, okay, well, I have that connection. So I just, again, I walked away for a while. I came back. And I start looking for, whatever I could find in Switzerland. And the site pops up. If you have any questions about genealogy in Switzerland, write us in Italian, German, or English. And we'll try to answer you. So I go back and I say, look, this is, Elisa Moore. Her father was Bernardo, blah, blah, blah. They come back and say, yeah, we know who they are. And he sent me a link to all the trees from Lucerne going back to 1300.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I was able to piece
the free service?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure I have the link around there someplace. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
And all handwritten. All these handwritten things from like, they seem to end around the mid 1800s.
Okay.
But some of the families go back to like 1200. Now, they didn't have, obviously, Switzerland didn't have nobility, but you could see there were probably, it's like here, there are 10 or 12 families that ran everything in Lucerne for 600 years.
Wow. How great is that?
One
thing I really wish, I haven't had the opportunity to do yet, is really dive into the Italian military records, like the draft records stuff. But that's one of my, I guess my goals is to kind of, so if anyone's looking for Italian projects and they want military records, send them my way because it'll give me a good opportunity. I haven't had that request yet.
Yeah, I have a link to one of them, where I found my grandmother's brother. He was in the army in World War One, Navy in World War One, and he died, I think he was 18 or 19. He died not through combat. He was on a ship, I think Bendisi was the port, I don't remember exactly, but the ship exploded in the harbor.
Wow.
And sunk, and all of these Navy guys got killed. And my grandmother's brother was one of them. And I think he was 18 or 19. He must have just been a seaman, you know. But yeah, you know, there's stuff out there. You just and I always say this: they want to be found. So you'll get it. You'll find it.
Yep. Yeah, they do. Like I talking about like how they want to be found. So my grandma's uncle Albert Fergetti. We were always told he died in the Battle of Cassino in World War II when his Jeep ran over a landmine, and him and three other individuals had passed away from that. And grandma was there when they came to the door and they told the family that, you know, he had died and everything. It was a vivid memory for her. And I don't know why. I always kind of felt a connection to my great uncle who I never met before. So a couple of years ago, I guess it was 7 years ago because my son was an infant, I was on Ancestry, and they had just added this new record collection. It was the grave records for veterans. And I found out, now my Uncle Albert, he lived in Yonkers, but at some point his body had been returned to America, and he was buried in Long Island about half an hour from where I live. Mm-hmm. So I jumped in my car, I brought my infant son with me, and we went to the cemetery and we went to his gravesite. And it was really like an emotional experience. And I called my grandma and she was so excited, you know, because she said she doesn't know why that was. And it looked like it was signed off by one of her uncles, that he had known that happened. But I guess they never told anybody else because they thought like the mom would be too upset by mm-hmm. the information. But I just think that sometimes like these people from our past, they do want to be found. And, you know, I always kind of, you know, it sounds weird, but I kind of talk, you know, even when I get a client, you know, I'll say like, hey, where are you? Let me help me find you here. You know, cause it's, you're dealing with people and, you know, go into that as you will, but there is that connection where I think we still, even beyond the grave, want our stories to be told.
Yeah. And, you know, I had hired a professor because I had a roadblock with Sorrentino family. I couldn't find anything in Italy about my father's family. So I finally said, you know, I got to find out. So he came back with a bunch of stuff on my grandmother's family, but nothing on my grandfather. And like a year went by and my cousin Louise passed away and she had lived with my grandparents. And she was the person I would go to all the time if I had questions because she lived there and she was older. The day after she passed away, I got all the Sorrentino information.
Wow.
So coincidence?
Yeah.
I don't know.
A few strings.
That's what I said. I said, my cousin, Lou, she was a haunt. So yeah. If anything was going to bug them to, you know, send me something. But yeah, like I said, there were just so many coincidence or, you know, somebody tapping you on the shoulder from the past that makes you find stuff.
Well, I'm excited. My grandpa had just emailed me 2 days ago. And since my grandma died, he was going through her belongings. And my grandma, she always said, you know, she didn't have any other stuff from her parents or anything like that. But he said he was cleaning out the back of a closet and he said he found a whole collection of documents for my great grandparents, and he's going to send it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm really excited. And I feel like maybe that was grandma, you know, up there just saying like, hey, look what I found.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. I've told this story before, but just before we go, I'll go through it quickly. I had never known too much about my father's mother's family, or that she had any relatives here. And, you know, when we found out about her aunt, we found out Linda hadn't even done Ancestry yet. She hadn't done a DNA. She was building a tree, and she said, I think we're researching the same person, Maria Piermalo. And I said, yes, that's my grandmother's aunt, and definitely. So, you know, we went back and forth, and she did the DNA, and we came up a match and everything. Well, her mother, her grandmother, saved everything.
Love that.
Wedding pictures, everything. So what we found out was that her cousin Jean lived with the grandparents. They lived, when I first married my first wife, they lived five blocks from me. And I always remember my father talking about Aunt Beatrice, Pete Petex, and Aunt Beatrice. Now, Aunt Beatrice wasn't actually his aunt, but you know how Italians are, right? The cousins got their aunt. She was older, so she was aunt. And I said, you know, Linda, I vaguely remember going past the house to go look at, you know, Louise's house. With my cousin Louise, we were moving into her apartment. She bought a house. We were moving in there. And I kind of remember my father saying, that's where Aunt Beatrice lives. But yeah, I was 21. It went right over my head. Anyway, she was coming. She lives in Texas. She was coming up to visit her cousin. His lives in New Jersey. So I said, you know, come over. I had my cousin Paul come over, who was Louise's older brother and all that. Well, Linda brought beads from my grandfather's embroidery shop that her grandmother had saved.
Wow.
So, you know, she gave my brother, my sister and my cousin and me a little package of beads. And so, you know, to hold something physical, I mean, this wasn't just a piece of paper or an online thing. This is something physical from your grandfather's shop. And what we found out was through the 20s, 30s, 40s, even up to the early 60s, our families were so joined.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I probably passed you on the street in Flushing a million times when I lived there.
No idea.
And had no idea who she was. Wow. So, but, you know, when we met, you know, that connection was there. And it was like, you know, we never were separated. I don't know how that happens, but it happens. Well, anyway, this has been absolutely fantastic. I love
it. Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time. And so anybody wants to contact Legacy Tree, how do they do that?
So you can go on our website, legacytreegenealogist.com. And I think if you go legacytreegenealogist.com/Sarah J, I don't know if that gets you something or whatever, but that's my link. So if you're looking for Italian research, it'll put you right to me. So it's legacytreegenealogist.com/Sarah J for Gutman. And we can have somebody will reach out to you and they'll start talking about your different options for the project and get your goals and, you know, see if it's the right fit for you. So either way, it's a free consultation and see what we can help you with.
All right. Well, that's fabulous. And I'll try the link and I'll put it out there so everybody could see it.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again.
Well, it was great talking with you. Thank you.